Okay. Turn to Exodus 32. Exodus 32, we're going to continue a series that I've entitled Preparation for Leadership. And that is that the Bible records a number of details about a man named Joshua, who we know is going to become a leader and lead the entire nation. But it tells us these details of before he became a leader. So we're examining those because they give us clues as to what kinds of things is it that prepare us for leadership. Let's get some scriptures here. Anthony is going to get Exodus 32, 17 and 18. Lem, Exodus 32, 17. Jake, Exodus 32, 18. Cliff, get Hebrews 12, 7. Isaac, Matthew 16, 8 and 9. Ken, Proverbs 3, 12. Mathen, trying to think here, 312. No, that's all. We ran out of Mathen. Just before. The thing we're going to look at today is that the Bible records some things that Joshua got wrong, that he was mistaken, and he has to be corrected by Moses. You cannot enter into your destiny without being corrected. A lot of guys think that discipleship is, I'll never make a mistake, I'll never get in trouble in any way. But that, number one, would be impossible unless you're dead. But correction is actually a test. And correction is a means of growth. And so that's an important issue. So, we have to seek correction correctly. Exodus 32, 17 and 18.
Now when the noise of the voices of the people came to the ears of Joshua, he said to Moses, "There is a noise of war in the tents." And Moses said, "It is not the voice of men who are overcoming in the fight, or the cry of those who have been overcome. It is the sound of songs which comes to my ear."
Okay, very brief verse. Let's talk about the lesson is about correction. Let's talk about needing correction. So the Bible is an honest book. This is how you know that it wasn't, you know, some of the criticism against Christianity of the Bible is that it was stuff that was made up. One of the reasons why you know the Bible wasn't just made up by its followers is it doesn't just tell us good things. So, yeah, our scripture is recording something, and that is that Joshua is mistaken. He comes to a wrong conclusion. Verse 17. Exodus 32, 17.
And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There is a noise of war in the camp."
Okay, so if you know the context, we only just pulled out these two verses, but the context is there. He's gone up with Moses. Moses receives the Ten Commandments. There's a great day. They come home they come off the mountain rather, and they hear noise in the camp. And Joshua's conclusion is, I think there's war going on. It must be a fight. And that's totally incorrect. We know they're actually having a big party. So, but the point is that he was wrong, and the Bible records something that he was wrong in. So, many men think that being a disciple is never making a mistake or never needing correction. And so they will go to great lengths to try to avoid failure. And so they'll avoid risk. They're never going to try anything. What happens if I... they're never going to try an outreach or... because what if it doesn't work? They'll ask no questions. For many men, their great fear is that they're going to ask a question, the pastor's going to look at them and go, what kind of moron doesn't know that? And of course, that is not how we operate, but nonetheless, that's there are guys who will never ask a question. So you figure, if I don't ask anything, I'll never look stupid. And that's not true either. But anyway, and then, you know, they're going to limit their involvement so that they don't make mistakes. So, our scripture shows us something. No one gets it right all the time. It's impossible. You can't be right all the time. You can't be perfect. If you were, it wouldn't be healthy. Your head wouldn't fit through the door. And so, it wouldn't be good for you and your character if you never made a mistake and needed correction. And or you would be unbearable. You would be obnoxious, incredibly obnoxious, if you never made a mistake. So, Exodus 32:18 is Moses is giving correction.
But he said, "It is not the noise of the shout of victory, nor the noise of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing I hear."
Okay, so Moses is saying, "No, Joshua, you're wrong. It's not war. You're wrong. You've come to a wrong conclusion." So, you have to mark it down in your mind is that as a disciple, you will make mistakes. That's just the way it is. And that is part and parcel of being a disciple. You will make mistakes. You will need correction. That is normal. It would be abnormal for you to never make a mistake. I have never had a perfect disciple yet. I've never had someone who didn't need correction. And so that is a normal part of life. So the problem is that, well, we'll talk about this in a minute, but in some guys, they have this obsession, like this is going to be a terrible, terrible thing. Like the pastor is going to be so disappointed, or he's going to be horrified when he discovers. That's just a normal part of life. Stephen and Emily sent us some videos of my grandson Jonathan. He's learning to walk, and so in every one of these videos, he takes a couple of steps and he falls down. And we weren't shocked. It's like, what? Our grandson could fall? You understand. That's part of the process. Discipleship is like that. Is you are not going to be all-knowing, all-wise, all-perfect. That's just never going to happen. Hebrews 12:7.
As you endure this divine discipline, remember that God is treating you as His own children. Whoever heard of a child who is never disciplined by his father?
Okay, I like that. That's whoever heard of a child who is never disciplined by his father. So he's taking that out of life. Of course, he's talking about divine discipline, but he's saying that would be bizarre. You have a child who needs no discipline? And so this is just a normal part of life. In a normal home, in a healthy home, that is an accepted part of life. You just factor that in. You mess up, you get up. You get corrected, you learn the lesson, you move on. That's life. It's not a drama. This is not the end of life if you make a mistake. So, discipleship, by its very definition, the word disciple is a learner. It is assuming that there are things that you don't know. If you already know it all, then you don't need to be a disciple, right? So, of course, if you are learning, that means then you are going to make mistakes. That's the videos of my grandson. He's never walked before. So, of course, he doesn't have that skill developed. That's what discipleship is. Discipleship is things that you don't know, things that you're not good at. Matthew 16:8-9.
But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves or the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up?"
Okay, so here is, this is one of many instances where Jesus has to correct the disciples. It's like, no, you don't get it. You've come to a wrong conclusion. And he has to correct them. Again, this is why we know that the Bible is not a made-up book, because it doesn't try to portray its characters in perfection. So, you have to factor that in. You will need correction if you're a disciple. Let's talk secondly about distorting correction. The problem is the distortions of hell. every person carries the past with them into new relationships and new situations. We have a number of problems. So I just presented to you a simple proposition, that is that you will need correction, but the problem is, number one, is that an increasing percentage of our generation, they're fatherless. And because of divorce, because of abandonment, so you have people who were raised in a situation that was not God's original intention. You have increasingly in our world, the most common situation is you have young men who were raised by women. So, what did they observe their whole life? They observe life from a female point of view, which usually is more emotional. That's what happens. When there's a crisis, how do you react? So they saw women's reactions, and they're factoring in what they're supposed to be in life. And so often, what was missing was the day-to-day male reaction. That brings an effect. Then you have some who suffered abuse. And so in their life, they had the violent, psychopathic, vindictive parents or fathers or people in authority. So they didn't have the ability to balance love with discipline. And you understand that if you're a healthy parent. A bad parent is one who doesn't, on the one hand, won't correct anything. You don't want to make them feel bad. You don't want to have them ever say, I hate you. You don't want to have an attitude that you don't deal with them. That's a bad parent. On the other hand, you have some who the only thing they do is point out bad things, and they don't have the ability to balance that. And so the abuse, so they're going to bring that. Then you have people who are raised in an atmosphere of rejection. And they're raised in a situation that was performance-based, or you were never allowed to fail. Just last night had a family dinner, and my nephew's daughter, she's talking about the way that she was raised is they were not allowed. Nothing was good enough. You had to, B's were absolutely not acceptable in school, and driven. And very interesting that you see how that plays out in people's personalities. So, you bring things like that are sitting under the surface. Now you get saved, God begins to stir you, and you say, I want to do work for God. Great, I want to be a disciple. Pastor, you help me, I'm gonna do the will of God. Great. So now at some point, remember what we said in the first point, you're going to need correction. So now you have men who've been raised with a female point of view or emotional point of view, men who are raised with abusive authority figures or rejection-based situations. So now they interpret this, which is inevitable. You have to be corrected. It wouldn't be healthy if you're not corrected. But now this causes a crisis. So, you're like Joshua. You come to a wrong conclusion, you have to be corrected. You do something wrong, you offend people, whatever. No, don't do that anymore, or you're wrong, or whatever needs to happen. So now we interpret that wrong. Number one is you have men who interpret, pastor doesn't like me. It has nothing to do with like, dislike. If you're doing something wrong, if you're in charge, if it's your job to do something and you're not doing it well, you need to be spoken to so you do it better. That has nothing to do with like, dislike. And so, but we interpret this. This is one of the incorrect is that he. Why did he correct me? Because he doesn't like me. That's absolutely wrong. Or he's out to get me. I know why you're doing this is that you are looking for reasons. Or then you have guys who they were corrected in the past, and then they carry this as pastor used to like me, but then I did something stupid. He had to correct, and now he doesn't like me anymore. It has absolutely nothing to do with like or dislike. It has to do with you need correction, and so that's an incorrect in interpretation. Number two is I have no future because I needed correction, or because I failed. This is the ultimate is. is Judas, who hangs himself because he cannot see a future. And that is often what happens. You have men, I've seen extreme cases where it's like, Pastor, I want to be a disciple. I want to do it. Okay, all right, hey, don't ever do that again. And that totally sends them on, it spins them out. They go into a funk. That guy's like, no, I'm leaving the church. Why? Because you said that to me. It's like, but you can't be a disciple if you can't be corrected. So I have no future because at some point, as though every day when the pastor wakes up, he pulls out his naughty list. Go like, I can't believe he did that. Right? He's telling Santa. He actually got that from the pastor. There's a few guys that are off the list. So, in actual fact, remember why we're looking at this issue is because we're looking at how does Joshua become a leader? How does Joshua become a man of God? So, the Bible records he gets corrected. So, correction then is actually a gift from God. Correction is good. It's not bad. So, in other words, a disciple thinks, if I do anything wrong, the pastor's going to look down on me. In actual fact, a guy who has never made a mistake, never needed correction, I know that that cannot possibly be true because I know people. I know either, you know, more time needs to go by or they're avoiding asking any questions by looking stupid. It's not possible. So, correction, number one, reveals things in us. It's a wonderful. Remember I was talking, was it last week or the week before, talking about years ago we had a drummer, he didn't even go to the church anymore, but not even say, but that had a drummer that he would start, and he'd, you know, the fastest songs, it was like he was on Valium. And so I was leading songs in those days, and I was the pastor as well. I wasn't just the song leader. And so I would give him the signal, speed it up. You know, it's like, we're not on Valium, let's go. And you could see he would physically, visibly, he would stiffen his neck and he'd get a sour look on his face. So there were deep issues of pride and rebellion in there. It's like, come on, man, if your whole life is if you're going to be sent over the edge by somebody who says, could we speed it up a little bit? Wow, you got issues, which he's not even saved today. And so correction reveals. You have guys like, Pastor, if you see anything in me, you tell me. And then you do. whoa. You didn't know that I was in there until they corrected us. As Joe Campbell has always said, you never know what's in a man until you tell him no. I have guys on the field who do that. Pastor, can I have more money? Yes. Can I have more money? Yes. Can I have more money? Yes. Can I have... No. And then they're all funked out. Then they go, Pastor, I got to confess, I really had to add it. Why? Because we wouldn't let you rent three buildings at once. You know. Okay, well then, so correction revealed. That was very healthy then, wasn't it? That was good. That lets them know. That lets me know. So it reveals, correction reveals. I've seen men turn from the moment I corrected them. They've never been the same. And so this is all good. The second thing is correction teaches us. So correction reveals, but correction teaches us. So Joshua comes down and says, you know what? So he's getting ready to fight. There's war going on. We got to go. It's like, no, that's... Pastor Moses says, that's not war. That's a party. There's something wrong here. So he's learning. Who is it? Henry Ford, who said, mistakes are the opportunity to begin again intelligently. That didn't work. You ever done that? You ever done that? The moment you open your mouth, you try to pull back the words like, that wasn't good. Note to self. Do not say that. Right? So you can begin again now intelligently. That's, mistakes are good. And so you've heard me tell stories of when I was a disciple, the battles I had over the drum throne. And I fought over this guy who was lazy, didn't have a job. I worked hard, by golly, and he came in and took the good equipment. And so I fought to claim the proper drum throne because the other one was broken. And I did, but I wrecked the concert. And then the pastor is telling me, he's like, but Greg, you wrecked the concert. The atmosphere, the bands were visibly, obviously fighting with each other. And we had less people saved than we normally do. And he was like, oh yeah. And what happens one day, he said, if you become a Bible study leader and they see your name on the list and they go, yeah, not him. I never thought of that. I was like, that was dumb. I've never fought over a drum throne again. Right? That didn't work. And I wouldn't have known that unless there are times that that's why being in bands is wonderful. Being in ministry is wonderful. You're abrasive and you rub each other the wrong way. That's great. That's not bad. That's why the dumbest thing I ever hear is people go, Pastor, I need to get out of the band, or I need to leave drama. Why? That guy's bugging me. That's a totally wrong conclusion. That's wonderful. That's not bad. That's good, because you now have to work it out. You know what? When I said that, that was dumb. Hey, how can we work this out for the greater good? You learn through mistakes. You learn through problems. So correction teaches. That's the beauty of it. Let's look finally here, and I see I have a typo. I have made an error. I know you find this hard to believe. The third point should be receiving, not distorting correction. Okay, so you have to have the correct perspective in both failure, because people do fail, and in correction when you need correction. Number one is you have to have the understanding that your pastors care for you. They want you to survive. They want you to enter into your destiny. Proverbs 3, verse 12.
For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights.
A father corrects the son in whom he delights. See, people who have a distorted viewpoint, they see that wrong, is that he doesn't like me because he corrects me. Or because he corrected me, he doesn't like me. The Bible says he corrects the son in whom he delights. In other words, he wants the best for you. If you saw, if you remember when I had my 50th birthday, in the sayings of Pastor Greg from his disciples, and one of those was, had to do with, if I didn't believe you had a future, I wouldn't bother speaking to you about this. That's the whole point of correction is, I see that you have a future. If I didn't, I would let you. Go ahead, offend everybody in the world. See how that works out for you. It's because you care that you actually take the time correct. This is hurting you in the present, right? My pastor took me aside. You wrecked the concert tonight. It's hurting you right now. In the future, how will that work out if you get greater ministry? Because correction has a present and a future dimension. And so that is actually a demonstration of love. That is not the opposite. Secondly, correction is all about the future. The lessons of correction are bigger than today. The saying that was on the board, I wouldn't bother if I didn't care for your future. So, one of the young men who put that on the board said it dawned on him when I was correcting him, Pastor sees a future for me. Wow, there is a future. So that's an important issue. So, correction is all about people. It's not about programs or equipment. Okay, you gotta have correction in its correct perspective. I'm not hung up on was the program perfect. I'm not hung up on equipment. Equipment breaks. That's life. That's just the way it is. There's nothing we're gonna do about that. But it's about people. So that is why you need correction. So think about Joshua now. In our scripture, it only gives us just the briefest of mentions here. So he's a man who, remember, he's a fighter, right? He probably carried a weapon. That would be a fair assumption. It doesn't say, but that would be a fair assumption that it's highly possible. So if you're wrong and you think that there's a war going on, You're going to run down the mountain hacking and slashing. Right? You're going to hurt people. It's war, let's go! And no. This is not war, this is a party. So, it's going to change how you approach people. I often have had to tell concert directors when I've corrected them, and say, listen, if you can't follow directions now about little nitpickety things, about changing light bulbs and filters and making sure the curtain is straight and little things like that, the reason why is I have to know that you can follow directions. Because someday, I do give directions to pastors that literally will be whether or not they blow up their whole church or not. You need to handle it like this. It's not about a light bulb. It's about people. That's the whole point. You correct small things because someday it will be about people if you can follow directions. And so then what will happen if you can't receive correction now? Imagine the guy who can't even take a speeded up direction in a song service as a musician. Imagine when it's a matter of if you don't do this, your whole church is going to blow up. Imagine if he did that and he voted, I don't have to. Then he would hurt people. People would lose their salvation and their destiny. This is all about people. It's about the future. It's about the will of God. This is the important thing. It's not about feelings. Okay, again, if you've only been raised around women, women tend to look at, and this is of course a generalization, but they tend to look at life emotionally. And so then it's about feelings. So then there are guys like, oh, I don't want to, there are things I have to get involved in. It's like, wait a minute, hold on, this guy's he's committing adultery with multiple women in the church, and they're, why aren't you dealing with this? Well, I don't want them to feel bad. What do you mean you don't want them to feel bad? Because that's an emotional reaction. He might get upset. She might get discouraged. This is not about feelings. This is about the will of God. Right? The church is bigger than any one person. You have to understand that. And so it's about the will of God. Then it's about what you will become and the effect on your future. Abigail, David praised her for her wisdom. And what she saw in wisdom was, she said, David, you're about to do something because you're mad and it's going to hurt your future. If you go and you slaughter everybody, you kill them all, then someday they're going to say, ladies and gentlemen, your new king, David. They're going, is that the jerk who loses his temper and slices people up in pieces? I don't want to follow that guy. She said it's going to hurt your future. And that is what correction is all about. What kind of man are you going to become in the future? So, this is a very brief scripture. So in closing, there is no mention of Joshua's reaction. It doesn't even say anything. How did Joshua take that when Moses said, no, it's not war. This is a party going on. So, I will infer some things from this if it doesn't tell us his reaction. So, what should you do when you're corrected? Number one, don't pout. Don't pout. Don't let your emotions rule. I tell young men, I cannot disciple a man who pouts. If I have to get on you, it's not because I hate you, but please, I have way too much work to then dance around. Well, you're pouting and you won't look me in the eye and you won't talk to me because I've corrected you. I don't have time for that. I cannot correct a man who pouts. Okay? And so that's an issue. Women and children are ruled by emotion. When you correct a child, that's what they do. They throw themselves on the floor. You ever seen that in the middle of a grocery store? No, I have to. Or they do that, they get their lip and it's hanging on the floor. That's because they're a child. We expect that from a child, right? and we correct it out of them. Pretty bad if you're, you know, 29 years old and you're still, no! You're pouting and making everybody's like, what's wrong? That's not going to work. You can't be a man of God and be a pouter. So you can't elevate your pride and allow it to dominate your life. Number two, learn the lesson. So the doesn't give us a big reaction because the point is, learn the lesson. What brought that on? What did you do to get corrected? So how can you avoid that in the future? If you only focus on the emotion, how do you feel? If you focus on your pride, then you're going to make the same dumb mistake again. The point when you're corrected is, note to self, do not do that again. The people who are in trouble, my next Sunday school series I'm working on it right now and studying diligently is on wisdom. Wisdom. The Bible has a lot to say about fools. A fool is somebody who doesn't learn the lesson. Right? That's the whole point in life is you... Any of you when you're young, you know, we used to have a wood stove. Emily, don't touch the stove. It's hot. What did she do? You know what she did. She said, ah! Be pretty stupid if 147 times later you're still going, ah! You're like, ah! But that's what happens to guys who let emotion rule. Don't do that again. Then you'll do the same stupid thing again because you didn't learn the lesson. The point is, how did you get there? Let's not do that again. That's the point. Learn the lesson. Thirdly is move on. They didn't stop. Joshua said, I can't believe you told me that it's not war, man. I don't even think I can function. No, we got to go take care of business. So don't pout, learn the lesson, move on. That's what you do in life. In correction, there's always work to be done. Even after failure, there's still work to be done. Even after correction, there's still work to be done. So Moses and Joshua get on with dealing with the problem at the bottom of the mountain. That was a life lesson. I was raised, I was very blessed. I had the same mother and father my whole life. Okay? And so being raised in that atmosphere, we got plenty of correction. I had a family meal last night and we were recounting some of the dumb things that we got in trouble for. And so as a life lesson, you did stupid things because we were stupid. We got our butts kicked. We got corrected. We were allowed to cry for a certain amount of time and then that's enough. It was a life lesson. One of the simple lessons was if we got corrected at the dinner table, we were not allowed to pout and continue that in the meal. Because this is what we do. So you get mad, don't do that, you know. You got smacked or told off or whatever would happen. So then what do kids do? We would go like this. And then my mother would tell us something loving, like, if you don't get your hand away from your face, I'll tear it off. Or, you know, you know, something sweet. It probably would get you arrested today. But, And so the point was, you are going to function. Okay? You did it. It's over. It's done. Later on, they'd balance that with love. Okay? That was a life lesson. When you get told off, when you get corrected, all right, let's get on with life. And that is how you function. So this is why the Bible records this about Joshua, because God wants him to be a leader someday. You want to be a leader, you want to be a man of God, you want to enter your destiny, correction is going to be a major part of that. Okay, let's open for questions. Something you want to ask about correction.
You mentioned that some guys, they get corrected and they're never the same again. Do you mean that in a good way or a bad way?
I was using that in a bad way. But it could be in a good way, sure. Like I said, I never repeated that particular mistake of the drum throne. I did plenty of others, but not that one. So, yeah, it can be good. But I'm talking about guys who literally they have let... And you know, it's funny about the human mind. One of the reasons why an example of what I said when guys are not the same is that they build things up in their mind. Often, you got to understand, I have a million details going through my brain in an average day. Just the sheer volume of business and details. So, hey, don't do that. I don't ever want to see that again. That's just one detail in a very busy life. So this is what happens. The devil promotes that as though, so in our minds, this is a focus. We come to church, we're looking like, is Pastor still mad? It's not even on my mind. It's not on my radar. I don't look like, oh, there they are. Right? It's gone. But what happens is the devil exploits that as though pastor's looking and just thinking about this all the time. And so that's why it's foolish to let it affect you, because often it was something that was small anyway in most cases, right? Yeah, so I've seen guys that they're not the same. They let it affect them negatively and do damage.
Pastor, there at the end you mentioned three things that you should do when you're corrected. Would you safely add a fourth one, and that is just shut up? Just quit talking about it, or don't allow your words to derail you?
Yeah, that depends. Yeah, that depends. Go ahead.
I've read a couple of articles, like, usually talking about, like, business management, where, like, if you're a manager, you're supposed to, like, give someone six compliments before you can give them one correction. As, like, a pastor, like, if you're a pioneer pastor or something, you have a disciple. Is that an imbalance? Is that, like, from a generation of emotions, or is that something that you take into account? Like,
well, I don't know about the six compliments, like, you know, your tie is great, your teeth are straight, but you're a jerk. So that would be tough. Often, you know, any of you that have been corrected by me is often I am balancing things that more because that's my style. I can't say that I'm doing that because that's this generation. I'm trying to give guys a perspective of, you know, you do have a future, or, you know, one of the simple things is the lesson I've given repeatedly to I don't know how many concert directors is I do not believe, I pastor very few out-and-out jerks or people who are evil. And so I don't approach people as though you are a deliberate, Nazi moron who's trying to destroy the whole church. Most people are just unaware. So often when I'm saying, you know, a simple thing, that guy's done incredibly stupid things, like, but that's not what you want to be, right? It's like, no. So I'm, you know, that's just more of a people. I could just come to that. What kind of moron would ever do that? You stupid idiot. Here's, you know. So, no, I don't think you have to balance it out with, you know, with six. But I think also it was interesting if you saw at my 50th birthday there, lessons, some of the things that, you know, those were things that I have said to guys who have been trained for ministry. And it's interesting, some of those were positive, right? I believe in you. That made impact on them. Somebody, I don't know who put that one down, but that made impact. So I do think it's healthy to, you know, Jesus, follow me, I'll make you fishers of men. You can be something. You can do something good. That's a positive, right? He wasn't always just saying, no, you got it wrong again. So there are guys that believe that discipleship is all correction. That's all you do. And I don't think so. I think that discipleship is inspiration and correction. So I try to inspire again.
You mentioned people who struggle with listening skills and small things that can lead to problems on a greater level. What is that in the personality that causes the guy to make it difficult to just keep track of and follow direction? Why is that difficult for some people?
Well, some guys, because all they did all their life is watch cartoons and play video games. No, literally, is that you got, they have very short attention spans. They've never learned to focus their thinking, right? If you look in the dictionary under ADD, there are pictures in there, right? So that's because thinking is it's a discipline. So it is. Guys, their whole life, they're scattered thinkers, right? I'm playing a video game. I'm watching TV. I'm answering emails and taking selfies all at the same time. And so now it's like, no, you're going to follow tasks and you're going to do that. So that's one thing that would be, they've just never learned to think. And that's a disciplined task. They've never learned to plan. They've never learned that life gets done according to plans and lists. That's a healthy thing. Making a list and knocking things off the list that's a very healthy exercise in life. I read the other day it was a speech by a Navy SEAL. He said that one of the things that the Navy taught me was to make your bed well every morning. And he said, I start my day by making my bed well, because if nothing else goes right, I did that right. I learned how to do something right, and I've started my day by doing something right. You know, it's kind of what he's talking about is planning and working through things. So that was kind of an interesting take.
Would you say some of these that have left the fellowship in rebellion could be because not being able to be corrected?
Yeah, numbers of the guys who have left in rebellion came from broken homes, raised without fathers, and so they viewed Pastor Mitchell incorrectly. Definitely. So, they were not able to receive correction, or they had a false idea of what it meant to be. Have a pastor, a relationship with your pastor, right? Yep, that's true.
So there's two parts to my question. How do you view pastor correctly if you grew up in one of those households, and then later when you're correcting other people, how do you help them view you correctly? I mean, because like in my job, I work with kids that were abused or were raised by women or were rejected. And so how do I, and I know that's the same when you're pastoring because people grow up.
Sure, sure. Well, you know, number one is that discipleship is individual. I don't speak to every person the same. Okay. Right? So that's number one is I can. So once you work out where people are at, you are much better able to speak to them, right? So there are guys that I know they're not there yet. So I have to lean more on encouragement. And by the way, that was a really dumb thing to do.
So be gracious about it.
Yeah. So there are, you know, you're maybe tailoring it a little bit. That would be part of it. But you have to also, you demonstrate over time, discipleship is a process. So it's a path. Wisdom, in my studying on wisdom is a path. It's not just like, okay, tick, I got this box, or I've gone through this door. It's a path. So you got, okay, pastor cared for me here, he cared for me here, he cared for me here. He helped me, you know, advised me, blessed me. Now he corrected me. That's just part of the path. So it balances itself out. And then you're preaching on issues that are helping people to overcome the past. You know, I preach numbers of sermons that deal with rejection or overcoming the past, and so. And then what was the second of that's how you do, and then that's what you should do for others. Yeah.
Yeah.
The same.
Yeah, I guess it's the same.
Yeah.
If you were to take over a church and you've got 15, 20 people. Is there like a time frame where you want to like evaluate before, you know, if you see somebody do something really stupid, do you want to like give it a chance to get to know them better before you make a correction? Or, I mean, is there like a set time frame in mind?
Well, you know, the issue is that there's a lot of, you know, correction comes in different levels, right? Is that there are some things that obviously are very minor. So we don't have to. So you gotta be appropriate. If your thing is, if the napkin is just a little not exactly square, that's not worth me having a meltdown about. Right, so if that's your style and everything, you're screaming like, "What?" You're pulling your hair out, which would be very hard for me. But that will hurt you if you don't have appropriate reactions. Then there's a lot of ways to correct. There are guys that sometimes I just ask them a question. So when you said this, and when you asked that lady, is she pregnant, and she wasn't, how do you feel about that? Right? And they're like, yeah, that was pretty dumb. Right? I don't need to go on and on about it. They know that. Right? So that is a form of correction without, what? You said what? And then there are guys who they're just flat. What they need is they need their butt kicked around their ears. And so it depends. It depends on their, how I treat a guy, it depends a lot on their reaction. And so taking over a church, you have to get to know them. You have to build some credibility. Taking over a church is you're building credibility. It's like making deposits. You make wise decisions. You're putting credibility in the bank, because at some point you have to make a withdrawal. The problem is guys who they never make a deposit. All they do is, there's another stupid thing you've done. They're not depositing anything good.
Can I have a second question? Would it be a smart idea to, say you're out pioneering, to call you and be like, hey, am I overreacting to this?
Yeah.
Or should I?
Yeah. And that's a common question. I get guys that, should I worry about this? And there's, no, it's not a big deal. Or it's not time yet. Right? So pastoring is so complex. There's so many different situations. So you get, here's a real life situation. A guy takes over a church that has sin in the camp, abusive pastor. I mean, there's just so many factors all at the same time, and meanwhile there are people who are showing up late for they should have been there a few minutes earlier or something like that. And so he's asking about, should he crack down? I was like, no, not now. That would be a terrible idea. So is it important, or people who are not upholding the standards of ministry? So I said, look, let's use some perspective here. Upholding standards are very important, but not when your whole church potentially could blow up. Would you be very wise to wait? You'd be very wise to ignore that for right now. So, yeah, you get guys who they bounce things by. It's like, if you'll wait later on, you can tackle that. That's not now. Or a common one that pastor told me, and I've passed on that advice, is, okay, that person needs to be dealt with. You need to get them out of the church. Okay, I'll tell them Wednesday night at church. No. You're going to get rid of them anyway. Why have it at church? That's what Pastor Mitchell told me the first time I ever had to put a guy out. The religious guy, he said, why do it at church? Because you know what will happen. His wife will cry. The ladies will come around, and then they'll make you look bad. Why don't you go meet him at work? I was like, that's a great idea. Met him at work. He got off. He was walking up to the car. Alan, we're obviously going in different directions, and I know you don't want to hurt any new converts. You really should find another church. You never should come to our church again. Have a nice day. It was great. It was brilliant. And that was because my pastor advised me. Otherwise, I would have had a big fight in the office at church, and it would have been ugly. So yeah, that's the more, what you're doing is, I tell guys, is if you, when you go out to pastor, there's a jillion things you don't know, but often you'll cover those same issues again and again and again. So you're making templates. That's what you do with the guy who is, this. So later on, you won't have to call every time. But you build up. You've got to make your templates first. And then they'll always be the way, and I thought this guy was a man, it's a woman, but I think, the mafia wanted to kill him, so what do I do? It's like, wow, that's a different one. So, yeah. Asking questions is a good thing.
Do you ever worry about balancing correction versus being fair? I guess just because sometimes you have a group of people and you see more potential in one person than in that these other people see themselves being corrected for small things with this one person. Maybe they do something small and you come down on them hard because you see a lot of potential in that person. Is that...
Well, again, so here's part of the problem is that we use the word fair incorrectly. Discipline should be fair, meaning you are not partial. In other words, I don't treat people different because I like them different. I've corrected my own family, my own friends, do that. So that it's fair. It's not like I'm correcting you because I don't like you. I like this person, so I don't correct them. However, fair does not mean equal. It is not exactly the same because there are, I mean, it's just such a complex issue, but there are, again, going back to I think what Isaac asked or Anthony asked was about you have different situations of where they're at in life, what I know they can handle, where they're farther along, how old they are. There's a whole range. So again, I don't speak to every person exactly the same. That wouldn't be healthy, right? So I'm going to be kinder and more lenient on the younger, the newer, the more fragile, the, you know. So fair is you should never be partial. Or there's a you're treating people differently, but equal is not the same as fair. So and you do occasionally have people who they have that. Discipline is not, for instance, discipline is not exactly equal for every person, right? So I mean, let's take a scenario. So someone they've sinned in some way, immediately felt guilty, came and confessed it, and they want to get it right, versus the person that I've had to talk to them 15 times and they lied and denied and pulled in other people to try to give an alibi or whatever. Am I going to treat those, even though the offense was exactly the same, am I going to treat them the same? Absolutely not. You see what I'm saying? So if you look, and then at the end of the day, all right, what I do for that person and what I do for that person is not going to be equal, but it's still going to be fair in that as I'm not doing that because, hey, I hate you and I like them. There's a lot of reasons. When you're talking about people are incredibly complex. That's why you need wisdom. You got to pray for wisdom because you got to know all these things, and there's always a new twist to a ministry. So I don't know if that answers your question. But. Anybody else? Okay.